Good evening, everyone. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters, and Paradigm Shifters are people who are making a big difference in the collective of our species at this time in the Great Shift. And I have a wonderful Paradigm Shifter for you to all meet, Lionel Fifield from Down Under, from Queensland, Australia. And I had the privilege to meet Lionel many, many years ago in the late 70s, I believe. And Lionel came to Vancouver, BC, where you truly inspired me. We had a workshop where you taught us all how to live intuitively, in our intuition. So, Lionel, let's say hi to everyone. This is Lionel Fifield.
Hello. It's very good to be on the telephone to you.
Yeah, it's very good to be talking to you. And you really ignited a lot of faith and kind of growth in all of us at that gathering. And I'll let you tell everybody how you were an accountant, weren't you? And then you became someone who lived totally in your intuition and into guidance. Am I right?
Well, let's put it this way. You're quite right. I was an accountant and questioned a lot of the things that seemed to go on, and I always felt there was a lot more to life than simply figures and dwelling on figures and trying to make the biggest profit. And I felt really all the way through a sense of people and people being what were really important. Now, I would like to say that I live entirely by intuition and guidance, but I think we all need to be careful with that one. That is my ambition, shall we say, mm-hmm. And it's certainly my focus to listen to that. All the way through life, of course, there are many things, many fears, many temptations that can take you off track, and I've seen so many people who seem to be going along very well. I've seen them give away what seemed to be, to me, the great quality they had or the inspiration they gave. And, you know, that seems to be part of life. In fact, I believe the Christian religion, the word sin, is that where you get off the mark. And the old idea is you've got a bullseye when you're an archery, and when you sinned, you went off mark. And all through life, we're going on and off. Some go right off, and some have to go through the big mistake. And I think it's often that big mistake that hurts us greatly and makes us even more determined in the whole scheme of things that we try and get back on. So, yeah. So, in what you say is right, but and it's certainly my focus on really holding steady and trying to be really true to that guidance and clarity.
Well, and I think when I met you, Lionel, you had come over to Vancouver to give a gathering or a workshop, but you didn't have, when you booked it, you were following guidance, but you didn't have any money to come, and the money, as you taught us, came as you needed it. Is that right?
Yeah, that was a great period of my life of experimentation there, too, of doing everything I did by donation. I used to travel twice a year to places like the UK, around in Europe, USA, Canada, New Zealand, and everybody was very, very intrigued that I would come there and not have a guaranteed fare paid. I'd be intrigued by the fact of, you know, I had expenses to pay when I got back to Australia, but I was always just amazed how extraordinary it was, how the money was there. I needed to do what I needed to do, and I needed to follow where I needed to go to. And in the same way, I've never gone out looking for somewhere to go speaking. I've always waited for the invitation to come, mm-hmm. and then followed. I need to go there. In fact, I've been to a place near Australia called Norfolk Island. It's a little tiny island, basically. And they called me and said, oh, you'll never have your fare paid. But it was very strong and I should go there. And I think we had about 12, 15 people come, and the person who organized it all, look, the donations are very tiny, whatever will happen. I just remember, I think the fare in those days was about $320, and I came away from Norfolk Island with probably around about $40 or $50, and I can still remember getting back to Brisbane, and there was an envelope there waiting for me. It came from somewhere in the northern parts of Australia. The man said, you so inspired me when I was here, when you were here about 6 months ago, and I've just enclosed my donation to you. And that was $320, which was exactly the amount of the airfare. And I've had so many experiences like that. And of course, life can take you through simpler ones and then more difficult ones, because it's all a question of how steady can I hold and can I follow what I need to do. And it's a subtle journey.
And do you think that the the appropriate funds come when you hold, or is it just part of the challenge that sometimes you have to patch things together yourself?
Yeah, it is part of the challenge. Well, I always found that as I did this, it happened. When I started working with another person a lot and traveling with them, I didn't find it work quite the same way. We then started having an amount put on it for when we went out speaking. But again, it's one of those things you've got to somehow always learn to work with others. I'm not a person here who has to say to others I'm with, this is how you have to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody has to be working in their own particular way, and they've all got their own circumstances.
Hmm. So what are your teachings, Lionel? They're following intuition, but I remember there's a certain amount about gratitude, and there's a lot about centering. Is that kind of what it is that you teach?
Well, as you see, I put a very high priority too on what is relaxation, because relaxation is really trying to quieten yourself and still yourself so you can actually hear what's coming up from inside you. I'm a great believer that inside us we have this clarity, and our heads can be chatting on and telling us all sorts of things. Our heads can be fully made up about, oh, no way in the world, or this can't be the case. I often watch, you know, people who could say things like, going around saying perhaps they hate their ex-partner, or they can't stand them, or something like that. When they really quieten down, they sometimes cry and say, I'll always love them. You know, We're creatures that try and protect ourselves in many ways, and we protect ourselves with our heads and our intellects all the time. We're trying to, but to come back into our hearts it's a vulnerable place. But then again, I've come to learn that vulnerability is one of the greatest strengths that we can ever have. It's because in vulnerability, we are not exhibiting, I've got power over the world, but I'm actually there as part of the world. It's a subtle thing, and it's not fear of vulnerability. It's an ability to hold steady in almost a state of readiness.
Hmm. And it requires sort of knowing who you are. Well, I just want to jump back here. So you called your center the relaxation center, right?
That's right.
And how many of you started it? I think I read here that there were six of you that started it.
Yeah, that's right. There were similar. I mean, all of, you know, sat in that room together. And everybody had a totally different sort of role to play, some very minor, and others, about three of us, had a much more major role to play. But really, life's an experiment, and we had no idea where this was going to go. And, of course, we've got now a huge number of programs going on here all the time.
Is it a big center?
Pardon?
Is it a big center?
How do we describe big? I mean, we have basically three rooms operating here and a small shop. It's not the bigness that is important to me. It's the It's the activity, it's the feeling, it's the genuineness, it's the safety. It's the fact that when people come here, nobody will ever try and sell somebody a course. Nobody will ever try and sell somebody a book or a CD. We're here, and all the time, everything is basically in a try to be a place of safety where people feel what's right for them and not be persuaded by anybody else. And even if people stumble with trying to work those things out, it's important that people are having the opportunity to have all pressures off them so they can start to hear what they know inside themselves, which all of us do know, so much inside of ourselves, and it's been shut down by a world that is constantly clamoring to try and, in many ways, make us something, have us be what people would say is a success, be, you know, cut out so everybody thinks you're wonderful or whatever it might be, or that you've got plenty of money or whatever. It's just trying to say, well, how can I come quiet enough to discover what my purpose is here? I'm this little cell of this great universe. What is the role of my cell?
Mm-hmm. And you were you always like that even as a child?
Say that again?
Were you aware of that even as a child?
What I was aware of as a child was an enormous amount of fear. And my mother used to always refer to me as a very nervy little boy. And I often describe my mother as a woman with big nostrils. And often when we encountered people, I would often hide behind her. And I'd look up and she'd be describing her nostrils would always expand as I'd look up and cut these two dark holes, as she'd say, he's a very nervy little boy. And then I grew up into a nervy big boy, and terrified of real socializing, terrified of public speaking, terrified of so much. And I used to dry reach and vomit for 3 days before going into anything, and any chance that somebody might ask me to say a few words, or I'd go to a public dance, and I would just go into this inability to eat or just dry reaching and so on.
Oh my!
So these are things that for me were my great gifts in many ways, because very early I was thinking, I really need to do something about this, and I could see there was I could recognise I had a bit of a spark with me, and people seemed to respond pretty well to me, but it was like, how could I then sort of get over all this, which just debilitated me? I was always very thin, and I go around to family, friends' homes, and their mothers would always say, oh, we'll give you a big meal, and I used to just look at it and start dry reaching. I just couldn't eat it, you know?
Oh, wow. And, real sensitive.
So one of my biggest things was that about 20, I went to a place and I did my very first thing where I had to stand up in front of a group of people and just say hello. And I remember just feeling about $1 million as I went on the underground train in England, and I'd come home and I'd said a hello. And the previous week where I was too terrified to get up and say hello, I still remember sort of going home and just feeling so such a failure. And so this has been a really valuable aspect of me, because I have such a sense of the insecurity in so many people, the panic attacks that people have, the deep anxieties. And I'm always saying to the team here, you never know, a person standing at that door, you have no idea how terrified they might be. This might be the step that changes their whole life to come in and start to do something. And I mean, these people come to this state, I've realized too, from sometimes reasonable confidence to something has shaken them. And I've seen people come in here who've been managers of big organizations. They come in here looking shaky, and they can hardly sort of talk. And I look at how fragile we are as human beings, the things that can change, and some bullying situations or situations of a breakup of marriage, or where people can lose all their confidence. And I mean, I could tell hundreds of stories of watching people in that stage of coming out, or people that seem to have quite a big front. You know, everything's fine, everything's great, but underneath it, they're crying out for there must be more meaning to life than this.
Mm. So that's wonderful, actually. You're absolutely right, or at least I'm in total agreement with you. So how did you move from being 20 into being a someone who's starting a center? You must have gone through some personal experiences that helped you get centered like that.
Well, I suppose you could say you keep doing it. You know, I mean, you get better. I remember once I got to that point where all of a sudden I thought, oh, people were coming from saying, oh, you know, you're a really good speaker. And I was thinking, how extraordinary, I'm so terrified inside. And then I remember at 27, there was a whole lot of people were saying things to me like, it's all right for you, you're not scared of public speaking. And I was laughing. And so I decided to, and this all seemed, doesn't seem unusual now, but back in the 1960s, this was really unusual. I set up a little school of public speaking.
Oh, you did?
And I remember I put this brochure together of all the things I'd still be terrified of, and said, are you terrified of these? And there's a picture of me looking quite wise, of 27 wise-looking man stroking his chin, saying, maybe Lionel Fiver can help you. And I still remember I had about 12 people come to this class, and I was so terrified. I couldn't eat beforehand. I was so terrified. And then the second week, one of the people didn't come back. Well, I was so mortified that I could hardly speak that night, because the, you know, the sense of I'd failed or been rejected, etc., was huge.
So,
you know, basically, I see in life you've got to chuckle and keep going and say, well, it's only my personality. I'm learning more and more. This is only my personality. And underneath it all, there's this little shining rock that's as solid as could be. And that's what we're trying to get back to. And that's the value of finding stillness. It's the value of finding quietness. It's the value of trying to just start to observe yourself rather than think you are that personality.
That's wonderful. That's really wonderful. And then, so the relaxation center came like 10 years later?
In 1974, that came. Yeah, and that was an interesting process. You know, we'd all been involved in an organization which had helped us sort of explore something of the mind and relaxation, and yet what I saw then was all sorts of things which I see can be fairly widespread. And it was like I felt with all that was being taught, I felt this wasn't really genuinely being lived. And I'm not standing up and saying, pounding my chest and say, I live everything. But it was like I felt that here was this place that was talking about love and kindness and sharing and so on. And yet, really, there was a tremendous amount of manipulation and coercion to bring people along. I saw all sorts of things going on behind scenes with the presenters and ownership and so there were a lot of things that just weren't right. And in the end, the whole thing suddenly ceased, and there was this building we were in that was owing lots of rent, and the leasing on the premises was owing huge amounts. I got together with these other people, and I said, look, I've gained from this, and I don't want to see it go up with a bad smell. I said, I wonder if we could run some courses and see if we could pay it off. Well, of course, the landlords thought the owners of the building thought we were just wonderful. And so we gradually paid that off, and we got it all paid off. And then I went to Findhorn Foundation in Scotland in September 1974. And then I came back and I met these other six, and I said, well, look, there's no way that I'm carrying on now. We completed that, and they all agreed. And then somebody said, well, what should we do? And I So let's start a centre. I probably should also tell you that in 1970, I was then 30, my doctor was both an accounting client and a friend, and he said one night, he said, "Lionel, I've really got to tell you this." He said, "With the state of your body, I can't see you living beyond 40. And then I went through
the next
3 years where I collapsed with diverticulitis, and I had liver problems, gallbladder problems, spleen problems. I was all over the place, dropping weight off me at an alarming rate. And
it says here in your bio that you couldn't sleep either, is that right?
Yeah, 15 years of chronic insomnia as well.
Wow.
So these are all good experiences. But it certainly has been very valuable to learn compassion on other people. And so when people come in and talk to me, because we do a lot of work here with people going through cancer and going through all sorts of different things. It was a real climb to come out of all this, mm-hmm. but it also gives you an enormous incentive to keep working and exploring. And I think this is what the great problems of life can do. We can either see we're victims, there's nothing we can do, or we can use the situations as an opportunity to keep exploring. There must be something more to me than all this.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of
something quite funny. In 1974, when I was going back to Findon, I was then so thin and it was a strange old thing. I had no idea. I actually thought I was going back to see my family, and it's then I was sitting there one day and I suddenly knew I had to go to this place called Findhorn. And of course, there I was incredibly inspired by my time, only 9 days there, but I was incredibly inspired by it. And that's how I linked up with Eileen and Peter Caddy, who I put tours on around Australia for in time.
And for people who don't know, Findhorn is where the entire community was run on an intuitive level, was it not?
That's how it all, I'd have to say that's how it's, with Eileen Caddy, that's how it started off.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, again, very fascinated in those early days how things manifested there and came about. It was something that, again, very much inspired me because it was right in line with where my heart was. And with all these things, it's like, can we explore them? Can we actually see them? Can we experience them? They're not words. They're not things. Are things you need to explore and then get a knowing inside yourself. It's that knowing inside yourself that is where I believe we're heading, so that we can become rock-like inside with faith and hopefully not get taken off track by those very earthly temptations, of which there are many.
Have you been taken off track fairly often?
Oh, gee. I mean, yeah, sometimes you suddenly see yourself going off, or, some of those great spiritual books, where the great teachers, people who've become enlightened, there's often thing descriptions, and they often talk about, there they were, and maybe this, somebody came and offered them this huge amount of money, or they were offered basically control of this, that, or the other, or, some beautiful maiden came in and and danced delightfully. I'd never seen anything so beautiful. And then they often thought they go away and they struggle for probably 2 or 3 weeks. They struggle over days and nights, struggling to get back to being in touch with themselves and what they know is appropriate for them, as opposed to going down that line and making themselves almost, I should use the word probably, slaves on the physical level, going off slaves to the physical temptations or whatever. And, it's not putting any goods or bads on anything in society, but it all keeps coming back to, well, where is your focus? What is it that you are here to do? Are you looking outside for your power? Are you looking outside for what's going to bring you joy? Are you looking outside, or are you looking inside and getting in touch with who you are and the gem that resides in there?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the challenge all the time. And of course, we can be, and whilst we are able to be tempted, of course, we can be so easily manipulated. And
we get wooed, don't we? It's easy to get wooed.
Yeah. We get bought.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why another hugely important aspect of the centre has been, I said back in 1974, we will never accept any sort of subsidy, any sort of monetary grant. I'm going back. We'll never go for any sort of funding anywhere. We'll never go for apply for funds. You know, this has to be a place where we accept that this is our responsibility, and we will not go out. Even when the going gets really tough, we have to hold steady here, and that's a great challenge, because things can come and you. And I've seen so often the change when suddenly it starts to move to buying this, that, and other, and we've got it now. It's such a wonderful organisation. People often say the future must be guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel strongly the future, if we're talking about guarantees, they've got to be internal guarantees. And that is that thing, not trying to make it right, because then... Usually, as my experience of looking at many different groups, as they get into that, there's something changes in what they do, how they do it, and the whole sense within the organization.
Mm-hmm. And the effort is made to repeat it over and over instead of following the wisdom of the time. Eh?
Yeah, it is that following that thing, and it's a very subtle journey, really,
mm-hmm.
because you know many times you can say, oh, wouldn't that be wonderful? Mm-hmm. All my worries will be over.
Mm-hmm. Well, you also taught, I remember you teaching a lot about gratitude. Gratitude was very important. And in the middle of all that, you said it didn't matter what it looks like. You be grateful and say, I'm thank you, thank you, thank you. At which point my car went by the window on the back of a tow truck. And we were all yelling, thank you, thank you, thank you. And my heart was sinking like, oh, no. But it was punctuating your very talk. It was quite funny. A good lesson.
Well, it's an interesting thing. I mean, in some ways, too, you know, it's reckoned that 98% of our lives are spent in reaction. So we do the same old thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to add on resentment and all those sort of things, revenges, you know, all these things that just come from repeat performances of what we've been doing for years. And often the process of thank you can just be one of the little techniques, if I could use the word technique, to hold us steady at the now.
Mm-hmm.
So that we don't go off. You know, there's another great businessman I knew who had people loved to working with him, and he had the thing when some really bad news was going to him, he would simply say, that's good, you know. Mm-hmm. And he'd say in the silence that followed, he'd go inside himself and think, what I could say that's good about that? But we saw an incredible wisdom there, because he actually held himself steady and didn't go off into a whole raving thing and things, perhaps looking for who was to blame and put people down, etc. So, I mean, I personally love when people working with me can come in and say, look, I've just made one of the biggest mistakes I've ever made in my life, and I usually go and hug them. Because it's, you know, we need to come through feeling better within ourselves. I mean, not many people get up in the morning and think, now, what good mistakes can I make today? You know, how can I make a mistake like cost the organization $1,000 or something by mistake? Not many people get up thinking that.
Yes.
And they're the ones that put themselves through a whole lot of issues with it. But the quicker we can hold steady, the quicker we can, you know, gee, I could see how I was I did that, and I have to keep an eye on that next time.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Also, that's healing, isn't it? There's a tremendous healing that can go on even physically with all that, hey?
Yeah, well, just see, and I think that's it. See, you know, we at least allow ourselves to be in the, you know, in that real essence of who we are then, as opposed to, and often then hear within ourselves what we can do creatively at that moment.
Well, I remember another story, if I can repeat one of your stories from way back when, is you were traveling and you had to cross a huge part of Australia, I think, and you were quite sick and you were coming back from doing a presentation or something, so you started to chant, I think.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Do you want to tell that story? I love that. Mm. That still flashes in my head, and it just did again.
Yes, it's a very important thing. It was actually in the period of, I'd actually, wasn't a big presentation, but it was kind of connected with the Toastmasters I was in. They'd asked me to go to a place about 100 miles away, and I'd gone up there, and it was a winter's night, and I was coming back from there, and this is when I was so ill, and I really was wondering, would I actually get home? And I can still remember thinking, I'd read about saying, you know, good uplifting words when you're not feeling good, and I thought, well, I wonder if they work. So I remember saying, I feel really wonderful now. I feel really good and really healthy. And I suddenly thought, I began to laugh. I thought, that is ridiculous. You know, that's the most stupid thing possible. I don't feel any better for saying that. And then something occurred to me, and I thought, perhaps I could sing these words. Well, I'm not known for my singing voice, but I started singing, you know. And it was my liver that was giving me great, great problems at the time, and I started singing, oh, what a beautiful liver. Oh, what a beautiful gall. I've got a wonderful feeling. And it went on like that, you know. And I really got right into it. I can still remember getting home and standing by my bed that night, and my body was tingling with energy, and I dropped into bed and went into deep sleep, and I always felt that was a really great thing to learn that night, because I could have focused all the way back on would I get back because I or was I going to die, or I could go into myself and actually start to have a bit of fun from inside me. And it's that fun, almost mischievous self inside that will, and I mean, I use mischievous in the nicest, most humorous way. It's like, and I came back sort of feeling really good inside.
It's kind of, also, okay, so how about relationship? Does that kind of thing, do you continue with that sort of process? And how do you work with your process in relationship, friendship, business things, close
well,
relationship?
Well, I should say I'm divorced.
Oh, okay.
And, and I should, you know, I was like everything on the line. I always remember, you know, been through huge things in my life. I had an awful period in my teens. I just felt I was absolutely hopeless. Nothing seems to go right. I left high school sort of feeling that a real failure in so many ways, and I'm very second class, and it was a good school they paid for me to go to, and I didn't enjoy the system or anything. I was just, it all just felt very foreign to me, and as I came out with this real lack of self-esteem, and so I really found I did a lot of comparing with other people. You know, I look at them and think, oh, they're so good at this, so good at that. And it's an interesting little thing because, you know, as I was getting on a bit, I was beginning to notice, oh, gee, I really compare myself. And I remember one particular man who, I looked at him for time to think, how amazing being like that. He's about 6'3", he has incredibly big shoulders, he's a great, good sportsman, he was amazing in business, in his profession, and had a beautiful wife, and he had about, I think, three lovely children. I was thinking, oh, talk about a perfect life. One day, I was getting talking to him, and I said, look, let's have a cup of coffee over there. And I sat down, and I said, look, I want to tell you this. I said, I really compare myself unfavorably with you. I said, I look at you, and I see you've got all these things. And I'll never forget that conversation, because he looked at me, and he said, oh, Lionel, he said, you know, I know it probably looks like that to people. He said, my wife and I really don't know how long we can stick with each other. We have separate, we already moved into separate rooms. He said, it's so difficult. We can hardly talk to each other. But, of course, in public, everybody thinks we're doing well. And I've actually said to a number of people, and I've gone into this feeling of negative comparison, and everyone has been in enlightening communication. And one of the things that's helped me to do is think, well, you know, I might look in on people and think how good it is, but I have no idea what their life is. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what's going on with their health. I have no idea what struggle they're going on financially. I have no idea of any of it. This is purely my fantasy mind going in and making my totally erroneous judgments of the situation. Mm-hmm. And
that's an example of where you lose your own connection to what's really you.
Yes. And then sometimes you can go into these relationships, and you know, and this lady I work with a lot, and you know, I would like the way her description of relationships, and I have absolutely great belief in this. I mean, most of us grow up thinking or hoping we're going to find that perfect person who's going to bring us perfect happiness for the rest of our lives, you know. Mm-hmm. And again, that's looking outside that there's going to be this person. And when I first heard her say this, I thought, gee, there's a lot of truth. And she said, she always believes that relationships are for spiritual expansion, you know, these close ones are for spiritual expansion rather than everlasting happiness.
Hmm. I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. You know, and we do, don't we? We get attracted to somebody, and I think much of our lives we can get attracted to things for what there is to learn from it, how we expand with it, and so on. And in that way, there's so much that we can learn from when people say, oh, it's not meant to be like this. Well, the fact is, it is like that. And then you have to say, well, then, therefore, what do I do? How do I best handle it? How do I grow from this situation?
Thank you, thank you, thank you, right?
Exactly right. We just thank you for it, you know?
Yeah. So,
they can be very difficult.
When you're going to be in a difficult, then I'm asking this because everybody's got some relationship questions, of course. But when you're having a difficulty in relationship, what do you recommend that people drop back into their, I mean, there must be some healing time required as we discover the bumps and grinds in our own soul journey, right?
Do you mean when a relationship is broken up, were you saying then we need some quiet time?
Yeah, or do we, when we're having problems in relationship, that's really a painful time for a lot of people, isn't it?
It is. I think, you know, one of the things we've got to keep remembering is we can't get anybody else to do anything. I mean, we could have a person who's a bit of a spiritual searcher with a person who's got no interest in that whatsoever.
Right.
And that can often happen. Well, so there's one lesson to be learned there. You could have two people who perhaps are interested in some form of spiritual search. One person could be really interested in some deep nitty gritty. Others are into more of a fantasy process. The fact is that there are no two relationships on this earth the same.
Right.
And so everyone is unique. Mm-hmm. And we really have to explore it as such. And the worst thing is ever to see that, I must have one of the worst relationships in the world. The fact is, we all have the relationship that we've attracted ourselves to for a particular purpose. So I have no doubt about that. And then we get into it, and then we can either waste it. Now, for one person, I remember a woman standing up in one of our groups and said to this lady I work with, who's got remarkable insight, and she said to her, I got married when I was 25, and she said, and she went on about her husband and now a divorce, and she said, I've wasted 20 of the most valuable years of my life, she said. I just can't believe it. Just completely screwed up my life. Here I am now in my mid-40s and, you know, wasted all that time with him. And this lady said to her, I said, tell me something, in that relationship, would you say that you've learned to speak up for yourself? Oh, I certainly had to speak up for myself, because otherwise I'd been chanted. Would you say that in that time you've learned to make more decisions? Well, I had to, because, you know, he'd never make any bloody decisions. That was just the way it was. Would you say that you've had to become more self-sufficient in that time? Oh, certainly. Well, she went on like this, and did about 10 of these, and she said, well, it seems to me that's a very valuable use of 20 years to me.
Did the woman get it?
Oh, she suddenly started laughing.
Yeah.
Because the truth is the truth, and when we can get so involved in what we haven't got, we stop to look at what we have got. And one of the things that can be very valuable at times when we think we've wasted our lives is to look back 5 years and say, how would I handle this present situation 5 years ago? And sometimes you think, well, gee, I have made progress. I don't think I could have even faced it 5 years ago, this one.
Mm-hmm.
And so in other words, we start to see what is. It's easy to be taken off track and get involved with how terrible things are, mm-hmm. and what the time I've wasted.
And how it should have been.
Yeah, should have been. No, mm-hmm. Should have been is a big way, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when you said, what else can you do? Well, I have to say that one of the things we don't do enough of is actually ever sit down and ask the people we're with, what are your expectations of me?
Mm-hmm.
And most people can't even tell you straight off. You know, we're like running around like little zombies in a unconscious state much of our lives.
Well, so many times we're
opportunity. Pardon?
So many times we're in relationship thinking we're going to package ourselves the way that we've idealized.
Yeah, oh, package is such an important thing, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, all I've got to do is do something with my nose, my lips, and, you know, give myself a bit of padding here, take this in from here, get the right color, get a color coordinator to sort of help me understand, you know, do this and this, get my legs looking a bit better, and then look adoringly, and we're made. And yet, you know, Jay, one of the things I have to say that's been amazing in my life, people have walked in here, and women have walked in here, and, you know, I mean, look, I'm a human being. I'm a human male. Oh, I'll look, and I think, you know, I might think, gosh, what a struggle. You could never say that's a... an attractive person. I mean, she might be coming to talk about Russian. I've never got an attractive person. What a struggle, you know, the way she walks and everything, and the look in her eyes and so on. And sometimes I found that, you know, for half an hour's talk, we get back through a few things, and I see that person. All of a sudden, it's almost like the clouds go, and I've walked out thinking, what an amazingly attractive person.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
So I'm saying this because I see it from this beautiful energy and brightness that can come out from inside a person. And their eyes change, and their body language changes, and it's almost like their skin clears. And I think, wow, isn't that extraordinary? Who was in there?
It's kind of a privilege to be able to see like that, isn't it?
Oh, I think it's... People say, why do you do the work you do? I'm 72 now. Why do you do this work? And I say, wow, I can't imagine doing anything else. I'm the luckiest man in the world. It can be incredibly tough at times, incredibly difficult, you know, working with over 100 volunteers and 7 days a week and 3 shifts a day often, and making sure everything's looked after and all the things are in place for all the speakers and so on. You know, it can be tough, but... the same time, wow, what a lot of bonuses there are.
Well, so do you, for training your volunteers and so on, is it all about dropping into the center and living by that inner, is everybody committed, is what I'm saying, to being that way?
No.
Okay. In a word.
Well, let me put it this way. I don't feel I'm here to judge who should be here.
Mm-hmm.
because people will come in, and we've had people come here and be volunteers and never do a course. And I thought, how interesting, because they have all sorts of advantages, how they can get into courses and so on. And yet they've left, and they've written me the most beautiful letters about all they've gained and how they've grown and what's happened for them and so on. You know, I recognize they've all got their different journeys. And there are some that, you know, why people come here, I don't know. See, we don't go out, I said in the annual report last year, we never go out trying to coerce people to volunteer. We don't try and manipulate people. We don't go to places where volunteers register on a national basis or anything. We, you know, just say, well, the right people will be here. And offer sort of about three possibilities for new people to come in and chat. And so some days one will come in, some days five will come in, some days nobody will come in. And that always seemed to be who we need here, which I always look at a sheer miracle in itself.
Mm-hmm.
All the hours, all the strange hours, all the 7 days a week. It's I always think, how marvelous is that, you know?
And does your income come the same way as you just in people?
Yeah, well, we got fees for courses.
Okay.
But fees for courses, and we have a small shop here. But there is that's been another marvelous and a remarkable thing to watch over the years, how the money's come, because we pay a very, when we moved, had to move 4 years ago when the old building was knocked down, our landlord sold it, and we moved to a place and had to pay 2.5 times the size rent. Brisbane then had the lowest amount of commercial property available in, I believe, the Western world, any major city in the Western world then, so
oh, wow.
Everything was at a premium.
Hmm.
And so, yeah, you have to take it step by step, but each day is a new day with a new challenge, but offering that choice of whether you go into fear and want to run, or whether you hold steady and trying to hold to what you basically feel is appropriate, you know.
And holding steady is it a meditation process, or is it just a way of being?
You saying what is steady holding? Well, I think it's there's a lot used about mindfulness and mindfulness meditations, etc. But basically, I feel a lot of it's a mixture of between really observing how you either react or respond to people, being prepared to own up to when you've done something that you don't feel good about. So in other words, you bring it out into the light and you don't hide it away. And again, you pick carefully how you do that and use your words accordingly.
I mean, you divulge when you've messed up, or you just are real clear.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You really have to just sort of be, because, you know, I do believe that, say honesty is the gateway to freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And
I agree.
And I think we're needing, we do a lot of hiding in our society, and we don't want people to see. I think probably my biggest thing is that for us human beings to be able to come back and realize that we are all human beings, and that we can, and what it's like to be a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've often thought, you know, when people go to parties and people say, what do you do? Well, it tends to be more of a process of these new people are impress them to the best I can, you know. And I often thought it would be, what do you do? Well, I suppose I spend most of my time trying to impress other people. I spend a lot of my time, fearing this and fearing that. And Well, that's interesting. I found a couple of new fears I didn't know I had before. And I got all those too, you know. And it's like, well, and it's the, you know, I sometimes tell a story of a friend of mine here. He had his three daughters shot back in the end of the 80s. And he was a very powerful man. He was a colonel in Vietnam and highly decorated. And,
what did you say? He had his three daughters shot?
Three daughters shot dead one night, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And like, he had a son, but there was his rest of his family obliterated. And he's a very powerful man. And he looks like a prize bull, I always say. He's a big man. And, of course, all he wanted to do was get hold of that gunman and tear him apart.
Mm-hmm.
And it was that which brought him into knowing he was so distraught and in such a state, you know, it's when he had to learn something about relaxation and meditation to help him. But I've told a story about him which touches me deeply, and that was that in the... He always knew, he began to know that he always had to face that gunman sometime who killed his daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And finally the day came, and I think it was about 12 or 13 years afterwards, and he arranged to go into the prison, and he went and they sat down. And he started off his conversation by saying to this man, "I feel very nervous about this conversation." And and I laughed because the gunman simply said, "I feel shit scared," you know.
Oh, interesting.
And I've often said when I'm talking about communication, giving courses on communication, I've often said, you know, that's an amazing way to start because you have two people in their vulnerability, accepting their vulnerability, and going from there. And he said that. The moment he'd said that, he was free to move on, and he could talk, you know, without reaction. He could talk about the responsibility this gunman had and what he'd done and how he saw that forgiveness was for his own being and, you know, and the gunman had to live with what he'd done.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew that as he walked out that day, he said that he knew then the gunman wasn't going to kill the fourth member of the family, which he could have done from his all his resentment and locked-in feelings. And he said he knew he was free that day, and he was ready to, you know, he's really clear to get on with the rest of his life then.
Wow.
But I tell the story because I think it's that thing of often when we're having difficulties with people, we're far more likely to go in and be... you know, we're not wanted to come over as being the big, tough, strong person telling what's wrong, as opposed to coming from a point of our vulnerability so that we're best able to come and have a real communication so that the other side is not on alert, so that we often get the most futile situations come about with two people in reaction to each other.
So that would work in a marriage too. So you're saying vulnerability is actually very healing.
I think it is the point that would allow greater connection.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that
I mean, to actually
sense.
Have conversations sometimes, well, I really don't know what's best here, rather than launching in and saying, if you did this and this, life would be much better for us. And immediately the other person, because the other person's got all their stuff about it wasn't them that's the problem, it's the other one, you know, so we don't get anywhere with that, do we?
No. So I know we have to wrap up, unfortunately, but you don't market, I guess, the relaxation center, do you? You just trust intuitively that people are going to come and come to the classes?
Yeah, we do have a website because I it took me a long time to do that. We have a newsletter that goes out to people, which people have to actually call and request for, and then they have it for five issues, and then they get often made in this day, we're not aiming to that. But, you know, so many of the younger people get saying, look, you've just got to, you know, people, I don't want to be getting paid for it now, I want that. So we did put it on the website, that is there.
I like your website, too, because it's straight to the point, and you really get to see what's going on in the whole center.
Yes.
So I really appreciate our time together, and it's wonderful to have caught up with you again, and you've revitalized some of the teachings that I got from you way back when.
Lovely. It's been lovely catching up with you. It has been a long time.
There's lots to talk about.
I really enjoyed my visits there, and I had met some wonderful friends around the world, so it's been good catching up again.
Are you ever going to be on the road again, or I guess you don't know yet?
I'll be going to the UK for a seminar in January. Actually, going on the 3rd of January, just a very short visit this time.
Is it prepaid, or are you going to be intuiting the money once you're there?
That one is it's a different situation, really. That one, I'm going with somebody else. We do work together a lot, and I'm going over there with a purpose for this one, and so I know it'll all work out well.
Well, I say many blessings, and it was wonderful to be talking to you, Lionel Fifield of the Relaxation Center QLD. That's the name of your website, isn't it?
RelaxationCenterQLD.org, that's right.
.org. Thank you so much, Lionel.
Lovely. It's been really lovely talking to you.
And to you. Good night.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, thank you so much for listening. That was Lionel Fifield of the Relaxation Center in Queensland, QLD. And Lionel reminded me that over there, center is spelled C-E-N-T-R-E instead of E-R as we do over here. So relaxationcenterqld.org. This is Veronica Entwistle saying, if you have any feedback on Lionel's discussion and his inspiration, or if you have any suggestions for other guests, or if you'd like a healing session with me or even with Lionel, it's veronica@veronicaentwistle.com, no H in Entwistle. And thank you so much for listening. Good night.